How fast can you sail? We're currently going in 8 knots, a reasonable pace by today's standards, and ebbs keep track with anything of the 18th century. From the elegant clippers to the racing yachts of America's Cup, and of course the legendary sail rocket, going fast requires a lot more than a strong breeze. The secret to sailing lies just beneath the waves. People have always needed good, fast ships. But it took Victorian England's obsession with high-value, time-sensitive goods, specifically tea, to create a new breed known as the Clipper. This is the Cutty Sark, today housed at the Royal Museum's Greenwich. Launched in 1869, she strikes an ideal balance between high thrust and low drag. Thrust is due to the wind blowing on the sails. It starts high, but reduces down to zero once we match wind speed. Meanwhile, drag starts at zero, but increases exponentially the faster we get. The point to which those two forces balance is known as your top speed. For thrust, the Cutty Sark used 3,000 square meters of cloth spread across 32 sails, producing an equivalent of 3,000 horsepower of thrust. There were two main types of drag that her builders were concerned about. Skin drag is due to water as it moves over the hull. A rougher surface, due to the growth of barnacles, would mean more drag. So growth was reduced by using a copper sheathing around the hull, which is toxic to marine life. Even so, sailors still had to regularly scrub her smooth. The other thing we needed to be concerned about was form drag, how the water flows around the entire shape. At the bow, where the seas are parted, we have high pressure, while at the stern, where they swoosh back together, we have low pressure. At the end result, it's effectively sucking our ship backwards. To streamline the ship by making it smoother means that we have less drag, but also comes at the cost of cargo space, which is why most ships are never quite as pointy as the Cutty Sark. Initially, she was intended for the China-London tea trade, but really hit her stride when she was sent south to Australia to bring passengers and wool to and from Sydney. Here, she met the high-speed winds of the Roaring Forties, a particularly blustery set of conditions with 35 knot plus winds, brought about due to the spin of the earth and the lack of any sort of land masses to slow her down. Normal ships can't survive in these conditions, but the Cutty Sark uses a unique composite hull made of both wood and steel. Her captain hoped this would allow her to survive and reach some insane speeds in these rough conditions. And she did. 15, 16, 17 knots. And then, far out to sea, she reached something rather unexpected. A speed limit. Every ship creates waves, and the Cutty Sark was no exception. As she surged forward, a bow wave formed, a crest that clung to her prow and rippled along the hull. Unlike light or sound, where speed is independent of wavelength, in water, longer waves travel faster than shorter ones. This meant that as the Cutty Sark gained speed, the wave and its ripples were forced to lengthen. Faster and faster, longer and longer, until wavelength matched the ship's waterline. This is hull speed. Push harder and the wave stretches even more, but now the ship sinks into a deepening trough. Going faster still means climbing your own bow wave, with a slope that only increases with speed. Even with massive sails and strong winds, there simply wasn't enough force to lift the Cutty Sark out of that trough. And there she stayed, maxing out at 17.5 knots. In an unfortunate twist of fate, just as the Cutty Sark was being commissioned, a 7,000 km shortcut in the form of the Suez Canal was just being opened up. Since only steam-powered vessels could navigate it, mostly without getting stuck, this made wind-powered sailing vessels redundant, basically overnight. The quest for a faster wind-powered ship was passed from the Merchant Navy to the yacht clubs of Britain and the Americas. A traditional square-rigged ship like the Cutty Sark works by catching the wind and then being pulled along by it. It works best when we're moving in the same direction as the wind, and your max speed is wind speed. That approach has mostly been abandoned by modern racing yachts, instead opting for a fore and aft pattern with triangular sails. These instead work by redirecting the wind, and result in a net force that's a little forward and a little to the side. If that was all we had, then the ship would just be dragged along at a bit of an angle. But instead, we have a special piece of kit known as a keel located directly beneath the waves. That makes things a bit more interesting. It works a bit like my outstretched palm. If I move from side to side, then there's a lot of resistance to this motion, effectively cutting out the sideways component of our force. Meanwhile, if I move forward and back, then there's almost no resistance. The net result is as if we put our boat onto wheels. Thanks to the keel's sideways resistance, rather than just running with the wind, now we could also sail at a bit of an angle. We're still moving downwind, but also slightly across it, increasing the true speed. Angle further, and we can go even faster. Unfortunately, with more of a sideways component, there was a chance the ship would be pushed over and capsize, counteractable with a restorative torque in the form of either adding more ballast to the hull or by shifting the crew to the windward side. Neither of these solutions were ideal though. For real improvement, we would need to modify the keel itself. In 1851, the Royal Yacht Squadron of Britain put on a series of boat races about the Isle of Wight. Intended as a demonstration of British naval dominance, the unexpected victory by an American crew resulted in international embarrassment and the formation of the America's Cup. Fought between a challenger and a defender aboard custom-constructed racing yachts, today it provides the perfect microcosm through which to study the evolution of keel design. We begin with the America, the winner of that first race. It uses a full keel, which combines the functions of lateral resistance as well as righting moment into a single, simple design. That was then later improved in 1870 with Magic. It used a retractable keel. Most of the time, it was in its fully extended position, providing maximum control. However, like with a drag reduction system of a Formula One car, the board could be retracted to minimize drag. This reduced control, which was fine when moving downwind. In 1893, Pilgrim followed up on this by revolutionizing torque. By placing a smaller amount of mass much further away from the hull, they were able to maximize torque while also reducing weight, resulting in a lighter, more maneuverable, much faster boat. Desperate to hold on to the cup, but out of engineering ideas, in 1903, designer Daniel Hirschhoff decided that the only way forward was to cheat. As we saw with the Cuddy Sark, a ship's top speed is ultimately limited by its waterline length, the hull speed limit. A longer ship can go faster before sinking into its own bow wave. Race directors knew this and had long since implemented length restrictions, measured as the waterline at rest. It was limited to 27 meters. With this in mind, Hirschhoff created the Reliance. At rest, sure, its waterline was 27 meters, but then when it heeled over, this would increase to 40. Hull speed was boosted from 7 knots to 8.5, blitzing the competition, who ended up giving up about halfway through the race. Even with these loopholes closed and the apparent lack of any new design innovations, the Americans kept on winning. And then, in 1983, came Ben Lexon and the Australia too. When water flows over an object, it forms vortices, which drag it backwards. Ben realized that by adding in winglets, he was able to disrupt this vortex formation, reducing drag. Simultaneously, they also provided a slight righting torque without the usual mass penalty. The design proved to be superior. After 132 years, a challenger had won the America's Cup, and keel design would be changed forever. With the advent of wing-inspired design, engineers returned to that ultimate speed barrier. It turns out you don't need to worry about hull speed if you don't have a hull. This is a hydrofoil. A wing allows me to rise above the waves. Briefly. A hydrofoil acts like the wing of an aeroplane, pushing water down to generate lift. On my powered surfboard, thrust is being generated by a small electric motor. But since that's highly illegal for racing, the power of the sail works just as well. At rest, you're stuck in the sea, just like any other boat. But as you accelerate, the foil begins to lift the hull out of the water, cutting drag to basically zero. Using a combination of three foils, one for lift, one for control, and the other for a keel-like righting moment, the latest generation of America's Cup yachts will routinely exceed 40 knots, more than double that of the Cuddy Sark. But it's not perfect. When water flows over the foil, it forms a high-pressure region below and a low-pressure above. At 50 knots, the pressure of that upper region falls so low that water spontaneously boils, with what's called cavitation. These air pockets disrupt water flow, and the boat goes from gliding across the surface to being rattled apart. If cavitation worsens, or if air gets under the foil some other way, like during a bad tack, drag skyrockets, lift collapses, and the boat slams back into the sea. Just as we'd overcome hull speed, a new 50-knot cavitation barrier had taken its place. Paul Larson always wanted to be an engineer. His dad wanted him to be a sailor, and the two compromised by having him drop out of college. Racing yachts can achieve some ludicrous velocities, but still ultimately have to race, going around marker buoys and fitting within competition limits. In 2001, Paul decided to design a boat based purely on speed. After more than a decade of development, this is the Sail Rocket. The thing only works in a 500-meter stretch of calm, shallow waters just off the Namibian coast. Here, a conveniently placed sandbar blocks the swell of the Atlantic Ocean, while simultaneously allowing for 25-knot winds to rip along overhead. These are caught by an angled sail, providing both our regular forward thrust as well as a lifting component, enough to rip the ship out of the sea. On the other side, we have a hydrofoil which counteracts this. Unlike those of the America's Cup, this hydrofoil provides a downward force, enough to pin the ship in place. In addition to a crew capsule in the middle, the entire thing mostly balances. Even with this minimalist design, the ship would still be limited by the 51-knot cavitation barrier. Rather than trying to eke out small percentages improvements in the operation window by making minor tweaks to the foil, instead, Paul decided to use a self-ventilating foil, which was able to trigger and control cavitation, reducing drag at these insane speeds. Below 50 knots, the foil is borderline useless. Starting off, the Sail Rocket is sluggish, skidding sideways and fighting to stay upright. But once she enters her cavitation sweet spot, she locks in and rockets forward. On November 24th, 2012, Larson hit 65.45 knots, a record that more than a decade later still stands today. Other projects have since followed in the Sail Rocket's wake, from the SP-80 that looks like a sci-fi spaceship to the Sirico that looks like a death trap, both building upon the self-ventilating hydrofoil to push the sailing speed record even further. For a time, going fast required nothing but a good crew, pointy ship, and a willingness to nearly die in the roaring 40s. Today's racing yachts use hydrofoils to glide above the waves, sidestepping the hull speed barrier that so limited their predecessors, while simultaneously still using the same basic physics. Tomorrow's record chasers will defy what it means to be a ship at all, relying on nothing but ingenuity, grit, and the wind. Until then, this has been James Dingle from the Atomic Frontier. Keep looking up. This video was wicked fun, but also just a little bit of a logistical nightmare. Huge thank you to the researchers, museum curators, and sailors for making it all possible. And of course, the crew behind Trailmakers. Part of what I love about engineering is that the engineering form of your vessel very much determines its function. Trailmakers is an indie open-world sandbox game that lets you build planes, trains, automobiles, and more. By designing my own clipper ship, racing yacht, and experimental record-chasing death trap, I got a rough idea as to what crewing one of these things would be like for real. Build your own world's fastest ship while helping me to keep the channel running by checking out the Trailmakers Steam link in the description below.